You're tuned in to the Kojo Nam, the show on WAMU 88.5. Welcome. Later in the broadcast, we look at DC's Vision Zero plan to stop traffic deaths in the district by 2024. But first, today is the 73rd Veterans Day holiday. I'll do the math for you. The first official day referred to as Veterans Day occurred in 1947 during the Truman administration. Prior to that, it was known as Armistice Day. The pandemic means the usual parades and ceremonies aren't possible, but we're getting used to that. We will still honor our nation's veterans. It will just be a bit distanced, with lots of mask wearing and lots of phone calls. So, how are you honoring the veterans in your life today? Joining me to discuss this day is Victoria Chamberlain, a reporter at WAMU, a former producer on this show, and a 7-year veteran with the United States Army. Victoria, welcome back to the program and happy Veterans Day.
Thank you, Kojo. Thanks for having me on the show.
You ended your 7-year career in the U.S. Army in January, so this is your first Veterans Day as a veteran. Does today now have new meaning for you?
Yes, it definitely has special meaning to me. When you're on active duty, you tend to recognize Veterans Day anyway. But it's certainly different when you're on the other side and you've had time to reflect on your service and what it meant. And I'm actually a fourth generation in my family to enlist. So it's given me a lot of time and space to think about their contributions as well. And during World War II, actually, my paternal grandmother served in the Women's Army Corps at the same time as her son was in the South Pacific with the Navy. So it's things like that that I'm reflecting on today.
A fascinating family history, but if you're having this time to reflect, it means that we're probably not giving you enough to do at WAMU to occupy your time. By the way, if you'd like to join this conversation, you can call us at 800-433-8850. Victoria, why did you join the Army, and what were your roles throughout your time there?
So, like I said, I have a family history of service members, but the military didn't really have a big influence on my life growing up. But once I got to college, those years were really marked by the invasion of Iraq. And as the war went on, I started reading about all of these incredible acts of heroism that were coming from my peers. The dreaded millennials that received so much hate really inspired me to enlist serve in any way that I could. So in our late 20s, my husband and I both decided to quit our jobs. We sold our house and we enlisted together into the Army as musicians. And we went to basic training at exactly the same time.
Wow. What were your roles throughout your time in the Army?
So I was a musician. My husband's still a current Army musician. And then I changed to be a public affairs officer about halfway through.
Well, the U.S. military at one time was made up of mostly white men, but that's been changing really for decades. Who is in the U.S. military today in 2020?
So it's still a small share of the U.S. population, and it's still pretty white and male. But that's, like you said, steadily changing. And it really varies a lot between the services. So one interesting thing that I found was in a report by the Council on Foreign Relations that showed the Army, which is the largest service, the proportion of Black women serving is significantly higher than the number of Black women in the civilian labor force. And that same research showed that Black men and women are woefully underrepresented in the Marine Corps, better represented in the Army. And the Coast Guard continues to have the highest population of white recruits of all the services. So it's interesting to see how much they vary. But over time, it's getting more reflective of the American population.
Well, back in 1980, just 1% of the military were women. Today, women represent 16%. What was your experience like as a woman in a predominantly male-dominated field? And what's your advice to women and girls who dream one day of joining the military like you did?
So as a musician, I worked in units and around major commands that had a fair amount of women in them. So my experience is going to be different there than, say, a woman in the Marine Corps, where there's a significantly fewer number of women there. And I interviewed a few women Marine veterans for a podcast that I did a couple of years ago who told me that they moved into units where the men had never served with a woman before, and that's really common in combat arms. And that's going to be a huge challenge for everyone. But ultimately, I think it's the only way to bring the services back more in line with the actual American population. And it will only serve the civilian workforce better when those service members transition to civilian life, get jobs, and have had experience working with a variety of people. So I guess my advice to the next generation of girls and young women would be join if that's what you want to do, and keep moving the service forward.
How are female members of the military generally portrayed in the media and in advertising? And what effect does that have on how people perceive women service members?
I think part of the answer there is that they aren't portrayed much at all, at least not enough. And that's changing. But most of the blockbuster war films and things that we gravitate to across all eras, even modern warfare, feature men, advertisements feature men. So most people get an image in their mind of what a veteran looks like, and it's probably an older man from the Greatest Generation, or like a special operator with a beard or something like that, because we've been fed these images consistently. And that's getting better, but we have a lot more work to do in terms of contextualizing who service members and veterans ultimately are and what they look like. There's a lot of misconceptions about where service members come from. They're mostly out of middle-class homes. And now actually the active duty force, the vast majority of ages are between 25 and 44. So that's going to change what veterans look like moving forward.
We're talking with Victoria Chamberlain. She's a 7-year veteran with the U.S. Army and a former producer on this very show. She's WAMU reporter. Victoria, as I mentioned earlier, this is your first Veterans Day as a veteran. What do you have planned for the rest of the day?
Well, I'm having a baby a week from today, maybe. This is my first baby, and I'm told that they, call the shot, so we'll see. So mostly just getting my house and mind ready for that transition.
Well, we're all looking forward to this baby, as you know.
Thank you.
What have you done in the past on Veterans Day?
So, being part of an Army band, and also as a public affairs officer, I typically would work at a Veterans Day ceremony, actually, instead of having the day off. That's a big part of our job. So, in past years, I've worked at the Arlington National Cemeteries. National observance. I've worked Veterans Day ceremonies overseas, so it just depends on where I was and what was happening.
The Veterans Day ceremony that you mentioned at the Arlington National Cemetery is probably just wrapping up. What's a typical ceremony like there, and how will today's be different?
So every year, the Military District of Washington, which is like the major command here in D.C., puts on what's called a Presidential Armed Forces Full Honor Wreath Laying. So it's a lot of words. Basically, a senior government official places a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. It doesn't necessarily have to be the president, but presidents have in the past. And then followed by an observance program, like a concert at the amphitheater in Arlington with music from one of the D.C. military bands. This year, because of the pandemic, those areas and the ceremony itself were closed to the public, and only select personnel were there in person, but it was live streamed so people could watch it. And you can catch it in the after the fact as well. It'll still be up. And the rest of the cemetery is open to the public today from 8 to 5 if people are in the area and they just want to visit.
Well, speaking of music, what instrument do you play and what instrument does your husband play?
I played the oboe and the sousaphone, and my husband plays the barry saxophone.
Just wanted to know. We got to move on to a more difficult topic now. Suicide among veterans has been consistently high. In fact, there have been more than 6,000 veteran suicides each year from 2008 to 2016. What are some of the reasons for those startling numbers? And have suicides increased even more since the start of this pandemic?
So when service members leave the military, they're leaving a culture that usually has a very clear mission, achievement standards that are easy to understand, and centuries of history and culture, right? So It obviously varies a lot, but the transition to civilian life can be really hard, especially if it takes a long time to find that sense of purpose to replace what you just had. And then that only gets harder the longer you spend in. The pandemic is really piling on that, as it is for everyone, like creating more isolation, job loss, anxiety. People aren't able to be with their family members. So it's what you're seeing happening among the civilian world is happening among veterans and service members as well.
Well, veterans are entitled to health care, but are veterans offered adequate mental health care options? Do they have easy access to therapists, psychiatrists, and prescription medication?
Yeah, so one thing that's really important to keep in mind in this conversation about suicide generally is it isn't necessarily all about the status of a person's mental health. Having a firearm in the home puts you at much higher risk of dying by suicide, for example, and veterans are more likely to own a firearm than their civilian counterparts are. There's also the issue of the VA having the right messaging to bring those veterans in to get the services that they need in the first place. Most veterans who die by suicide, sadly, were never even on the VA's radar. And that's something that the Veterans Administration is really looking at hard, and it has the funds to do. It's the second highest funded federal agency next to the DOD. So we also have to make sure, you know, by having a conversation about access to mental health services for veterans, that we're not painting all veterans with a really broad brush and saying, you know, they all are afflicted with PTSD and are all a danger to themselves and others. Having said that, service members transitioning from active duty are eligible for mental health services at their local VA facilities for a year after their separation, regardless of their status, of their discharge, or if they retired or what.
We only have about a minute or less left, but I do want to bring in John in Colonial Beach, Virginia. John, we don't have a lot of time, but we want to hear from you. Go ahead, please.
I'll make it fast, Kojo. I spoke to you this past Memorial Day with Joe Galloway, and I do want to talk to Victoria.
Sure.
But, Victoria, I hope after the program I can speak to you off the air and talk to you over the telephone. I want to talk to you about the Vietnam Veteran Memorial, the wall. I guess, have you ever seen it? Have you seen the wall?
Yes.
Okay. The program you may be interested in, that is, look down the center, it says 1975. The Vietnam War did not end in 1975. It ended in 1973 by the Vietnam Disengagement Act of Congress. And we're trying to get those names to be classified as Vietnam veterans. I've been working on this project for 25 years. Started out in Omaha, now I live. But I want to get back with you, Victoria, later on, if that's okay.
Well, what we're going to do, John, is take your number and pass it on to Victoria, but we're out of time right now. Thank you for your call. Victoria, thank you so much for joining us, and good luck next week.
Thank you so much, Kojo. It was a pleasure.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll look at DC's Vision Zero plan to stop traffic deaths by 2024. I'm Kojo Nnamdi.
WAMU 88.5 is your listener-supported NPR news station in the greater Washington, D.C. region. You can support the Kojo Nnamdi Show and all the regional coverage you value by becoming a member today. Click the donate button at WAMU.org, and thanks.